Welcome to the Rise Network podcast show, a podcast dedicated to help you reach your dream lifestyle through investing in real estate. We're going to be sitting down with new, intermediate, and experienced investors to talk all about real estate and how it has changed their lives. If you're looking to scale your portfolio or even just get into real estate investing, you're in the right place. Make sure to tune in. Welcome everyone to the Rise Network podcast show, episode one. Yay! My name is Austin Yeh.
My name is Mayu Thava. We're going to be your hosts for the Rise podcast series.
Mayu, how's everything going, man? How you feeling? You excited?
It's good. It's good. Yeah, we just entered stage two in COVID. So I think everyone's just getting out there, relaxing a little bit and chilling. I mean, I don't know when this will actually be released. But for now, the real estate world seems to be on a little bit of an uptick, whether it's the GTA or Windsor. It's kind of crazy. I don't know. What are you seeing on your side, Austin?
Yeah, no, things are definitely a bit crazy. So it seemed like the slowdown only realistically was 3, 4, maybe 5 weeks at max. And then after that, real estate just hit the ground running again. Not sure how long that's going to last for. Obviously, I'm enjoying the ride.
Yeah, it started, I'd say, like mid-March. And by June 1st, it was like basically back to normal, right? So we were able to pick up a few properties. Well, actually, it was just really one property and a bunch of closings in that time. But it was like people were just hesitant, scared, and no one really wanted to buy anything. But now it still seems like the student rental market, like people are very cautious of, as they should be, because the universities aren't really very clear on when they're opening up. So the impact of that on the valuations, like we're seeing it right now, like they're quite significantly under market. Which is why, like, we're basically just exclusively picking up student rentals at this point, right?
Yeah, you know what? Like, when people are running away from an opportunity, there leaves space for spread, for equity to be made over the long term. And I've screwed up in the stock market. The stock market went through a 30% dip. I didn't buy anything because I was like, oh, the dip is going to go down lower. And of course, that was a once in a 20-year type of thing, because I don't anticipate the stock market to drop 30% again, just because COVID was not priced in the stock market. But now people are expecting a second wave, if you may. So if that does come in, you're not going to see a 30% drop. You are going to see a little decline, but not what we saw initially. And that opportunity slipped by so quickly. Same with real estate. We only picked up one property during that little slowdown, and I regret it. I wish we picked up much, much more, because you could scoop up properties well below asking during that two period time. And now we have that opportunity in our laps one more time with the student rental market. We know the yield, the rental income there is absolutely nuts for the purchase price, and it's gotten even better now. So why not? We're just taking advantage of this.
Yeah, it's a strategy of pick up as much as you can while you can, and then you can take longer to turn them around, because these are like the student rental market's not at peak occupancy yet. Maybe if you were going to add a few bedrooms, maybe you delay that. So the strategy can be adapted. But the objective right now is pick up as much as you can at the lower valuations, which, you know, leaves more margin for error for yourself in the future, right? As prices eventually increase. To give you guys some background on myself and Austin, given that this is the first podcast episode for the Rise Network, my story, I'm an investor from Toronto. I've got four properties out here in Toronto. And then I really went over to Windsor for the cash flow and the easier burst strategies out there. So I've got 14 units right now in Windsor. I'm hoping to kind of get to about 20 to 25 by the end of the year is kind of my goal. Ultimately, I'm a cash flow investor and a burr investor. And I'm going to be co-hosting this podcast here with Austin. I've been investing over the last 3 years. And I think we're going to be able to interview some awesome guests as well. So Austin, for the listeners, why don't you let them know what your story is on a high level?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm a real estate investor, of course, hence I'm hosting the show. I've been investing for close to 2 years now. I think it's probably about 21 months or so. Currently, I have 20 properties. Most of the holdings are down at Windsor. Of course, I went there for the cash flow and being able to burr a property, which we'll be talking about a little bit later on the show. But yeah, so I was burning properties down at Windsor, and then I bought two in Toronto, both of which are pre-constructions. One of them was an assignment deal, which I got well below market value. Kind of the goals that I'm aiming for is that, of course, I'm investing in real estate to create my dream lifestyle. And it's actually happening much quicker than I originally thought. I think the beautiful thing with real estate is the more work you put in, although at the beginning it's a bit slow, you'll see the fruits of your labor fairly quickly compared to other investment classes. So currently I'm still working a full-time job, but of course, ideally in a couple of years, I hope to transition into real estate full time. That's a little bit about me. And let's talk about the Rise Network a little bit. The Rise Network is actually an organization that was created, I want to say it was last year, July, and it just started off as a little meetup down at the GTA. We saw the need that there wasn't much of a meetup in the GTA, especially core downtown in North York. We've seen meetups down in the Durham region, some of it in Brampton and Mississauga, but nothing within the most populated area of Ontario. And with that need, we also noticed that Mayo and I attend a bunch of different networking seminars. And a lot of the times, we're usually the youngest people there, which could be quite frightening for an investor. And so with those two needs, we knew that, hey, there's definitely a demand for a networking event for younger audiences. Just because we're young and hungry investors, we wanted to make waves, but it was quite intimidating to navigate kind of the waters of real estate when starting off. So we started it as a casual meetup down at Toronto, where people just came, hung out, drank beers, and we just talked real estate. And then eventually evolved into a more bigger meetup where we're inviting guests to come out and speak and educate our audience. Ultimately, what the mission of Rise Network is to elevate the financial IQ and the financial well-being of the everyday person. So your average Joe that you see working either a blue-collar job, your average Joe working in a corporate job, they might not be super sophisticated investors, but you don't need to be highly, highly educated to dive into the world of real estate and find success in it.
So essentially, me and Austin, we really first met at that, I think it was the second event for Rise. And I had just moved downtown and I was like, hey, like, what's this random event that someone's hosting? Back then, I was only at like 3 or 4 properties, I think. And talking to people that had 6 or 7, understanding how they did it. That was really like what allowed me to kind of grow my portfolio and really have the confidence to do it myself, right? So it's a lot about like surrounding yourself with like-minded individuals, because like a lot of the people that are in our networks, just from like universities or high schools or whatever, they're not really doing real estate investing the way that we want to be doing it. So it's just about surrounding yourself with like-minded individuals. So ultimately, this podcast will be the Rise Network podcast. We're moving into the audio space a little bit. It's definitely going to be very heavily centered around real estate investing. So we'll start off with interviewing a broad range of guests. Early on in the podcast, it'll be, you know, guests with a few properties, the story of how they really got started, what motivated them, and really picking their brains so that a new investor knows how they too can get started. But eventually, as the podcast grows and the quality and the type of individuals that we bring on will evolve as well. But we want to have a breadth of interviewees across a range of success.
That's super key, man. I've realized that a lot of podcasts just go straight to some of the big investors, and it's a bit hard to relate to. When I listen to Bigger Pockets, and we were talking about this offline, some of the best episodes on Bigger Pockets were the people within 0 to 10 properties, because we could relate to the story and they just broke things down in a much more simpler level just because they were newer investors as well. So we're definitely going to give you, again, like what Mayu was saying, that broad range of investors from beginner, intermediate, and experienced.
Yeah. So it's important to understand across the spectrum, right? Like going back to Bigger Pockets, I guess they showed you really what is possible at like the highest level. And then you kind of think, okay, like that'll never really be me. Like, I don't know how to get there in between and all the steps in between. So you're essentially like viewing it as a ladder. So if you start off with smaller investors, gives you a solid understanding of how to get started. Then the medium investors shows you what you could be like in like maybe 2 to 3 years. And then the longer term objectives are out there as well by viewing the large investors, right? And then eventually, I think with this podcast, we also want to like bring in other sources of passive income. So real estate is great. It's some people call it passive, some people call it active as a source of income. I like to think of it as active, but ultimately me and Austin, we're definitely very big like passive income people. Like we want to build a portfolio of passive income. So we'll be bringing on investors and other interviewees and guests that aren't necessarily just real estate investors. So if anyone has any recommendations on who we should talk to about that, feel free to shoot either one of us a DM and just let us know.
Yeah, Mayu, actually, I think an interesting topic right now is let's talk a little bit about why we enjoy real estate investing. Of course, this is the first podcast. Some listeners out there might not have even considered real estate investing. Of course, I think if you're listening to this, the thought might have came to your mind. But for you personally, why are you investing in real estate? And what do you like about the asset class?
Yeah, so I'd say back in 2018, some personal life issues and matters that popped up made me very heavily invested in learning how to be financially independent. I hated the idea that I was financially dependent on anyone else for my own, let's say, paycheck or source of income and so on, right? So back in 2018, I started looking into, so I already had a few properties, but never really thought I would get to like whatever properties we're at now, right? But I started looking at real estate differently. I started seeing the cash flow potential and the impact that it could have in generating passive income or cash flow for yourself to help you be financially independent. So for me, ultimately, real estate is a great source for financial independence. But also growing up, to me, real estate was wealth. Like I imagine myself as kind of the kid that would look at like certain buildings and go, oh, like I want to own that one day. I want to own this one day. And I just wanted, yeah, yeah, it's not normal for sure. Like I was also the child that grew up listening to 680 News. So that was my childhood. But either way, like growing up, I always thought of real estate as a great source of wealth and as being the true like representation of wealth, right? So for me, it's financial independence and wealth building. What about yourself?
Yeah, for me, exactly the same thing in terms of financial independence. So the viewers who are out there who don't know what financial independence is, it's essentially when you're getting money from passive income streams. So rental income, for example, and the amount of income that you get surpasses the expenses that you have on a monthly basis. And of course, there's two ways to go about it. You can either increase your passive income, So it increases over your expenses, or you can just cut down your spending. So decrease the expense line item. So you'll need less sources of income to meet financial independence. But for me, what it was is that I don't mean to brag or anything, but when it comes down to what people see as a successful life in terms of career path wise, my family grew up in India, blue labor, came down here, made me work hard, made me study hard. We didn't have much, so I wanted to be a doctor. Of course, that didn't work out because I had no passion in the sciences at all. But then I found that I was getting very high grades in business, transitioned into university, got a good scholarship, and I worked very prestigious co-op terms. I worked in the Big Four, both in consulting and audit, and Hydro One, and currently I'm working at the Big Five banks in finance. And by any measure of success in terms of what society sees, doing well in school, having extracurricular activities, and getting good jobs, I felt like I measured up to it, but I was not happy. Not happy at all with where I was in life. And it clicked to me that I didn't want to be working for someone else. And some of the happiest moments, and I think me and you can relate, when you reflect back to the happiest moments in your life, it's not buying luxury stuff. It's when you had that vacation with whether the wife, the boys, or whatever the case is. Like one of the most memorable moments in my life was going to Vietnam and traveling with my parents. It was, but oh man, like I wish I could go back to that time. I really do. Yeah, but I can't right now. And I'm trying to recapture that moment. For me to recapture that moment, I need to get financial independence. And real estate is an amazing asset to do that.
I agree entirely with like everything you're saying there. I guess touching on my side of that, I am not a very frugal guy. So I was always more focused on how do I grow the top line rather than trying to adjust my lifestyle and my expenses, right?
How do I afford that Louis Vuitton wallet?
But at the same time, like you don't give into lifestyle erosion, right? Like I'd say I live the exact same as I did when I earned maybe like 60 or 70K. But that 60 or 70K is where I set the bar and I'm not willing to go lower than that. Like I like eating my fast food. I like being able to like buy like, I don't know, like clothes or like whatever. Like I don't want to have to like be overly frugal. And so that's why I was like, okay, so that's my baseline expenses. Let me see how I can increase my top line revenue. And there's only so much you can do at a certain pace from your employment perspective, right? So I started, you know, adding private lending to my portfolio. I started adding real estate properties that would cash flow, that would generate wealth. And that really, you know, skyrocketed for me over the last few years. So that's my story. And I think the next two episodes are going to be, you know, me and Austin really interviewing each other, going into kind of the details of our own backstory so you, the listeners, can kind of understand that. And then from there, the podcast series will, like we said earlier, go on to interviewing multiple other guests. So if anyone has any recommendations, feel free to let us
know. Absolutely. Yeah. With the real estate asset, I do want to touch on an important point with it is that the difference between real estate and like the stock market or other asset classes is that real estate, there's four ways to win. You can buy undervalued properties, which is what we pretty much do day in and day out. How do you buy undervalued properties? I'm sure we're going to invite a wholesaler to talk about that. What is a wholesaler? make sure you guys subscribe to the podcast, because you'll learn about it as we evolve and we create more episodes. But you can definitely buy undervalued assets. Real estate is an inefficient market. There's the cash flow component. We talked about that before. Your revenues minus your expenses, whatever's left over, that's your cash flow. So that's money coming into your pocket every single month. That's amazing. There's the equity pay down component.
Yeah. So ultimately, the longer you hold your properties, every year that rent comes in, and like Austin said, I think a portion of that would be your cash flow. It goes to your expenses. But every month, that mortgage amount that you owe to the bank is getting reduced, right? So on a monthly basis, it gets reduced. So even if you make nothing from the price appreciation, the cash flow, even if you make nothing anywhere else, that mortgage amount getting written down is your rate of return. And that's another way to make great money. And what was the fourth method then?
Natural appreciation, which is what we do not have control over, believe it or not. We cannot control what the market does over real estate. We saw coronavirus hit the entire world, took the world by storm, and real estate prices pretty much went up shortly after. Yep. So, I mean, we don't have much of a control over that.
Yeah, but the important thing to realize there is, even if you think inflation, real estate will just go up with inflation, at the end of the day, as a result of leverage, you're buying, let's just say, a $500,000 asset, but you're only putting $100,000 in, right? So that $500,000 asset will increase at 2% per year, which is rough math here, about $10,000 a year, and you're making then $10,000 on your $100,000 of down payment, right? So that inflation and natural appreciation is definitely a great source of wealth for a lot of people as well, even if nothing else works out in your favor.
Exactly. And with all of those ways to win, pretty much if you're just sitting down chilling on vacation, you're still getting your cash flow every single month. You're getting your rent payment. You're getting that equity pay down. You're getting that passive appreciation, as we were just talking about. The only thing you might not be getting is the forced appreciation, of course, if we're doing this completely passively.
Yeah.
But that's an amazing thing. Imagine like you and I were just chilling at Bali and we're just getting paid every day. Like, that's a very powerful tool. I can't say the same thing with the stock market, because the stock market, although it has growth over the long term, it's extremely volatile. And with a lot of other income streams, it's a bit more active in nature, right? There's a way to make real estate passive, which is creating teams and systemizing, which again, tune in to our podcast, because we'll be talking about that.
And I guess touching on what Austin was saying, there are a lot of real estate, like you said, you could do it from anywhere in the world. And it's not something you need to watch and monitor every single day. It's an illiquid asset. And at like me and Austin, the amount of properties we own, it's not like we're doing real estate every single day. Like yesterday, I was having an off day, just didn't do much real estate, right? So you're allowed to take those breaks and gaps from real estate investing, and your properties will still continue to generate you a great rate of return. But ultimately, what makes real estate an attractive asset class for, I think, myself and Austin, is really just applying the Burr method of real estate investing. So that's buying the assets. So generally, you want to buy the asset under market. You want to perform some strategic renovations. And then you want to be able to rent the asset for top dollar value and refinance, take out your initial investment and the renovation money when possible. And then you just want to repeat the cycle. So it basically allows you to do real estate investing on steroids. And I think our future guests, a lot of them are going to be Burr investors. So we won't go too in depth on this topic right now, but So for sure, we'll be talking about the Burr a lot in our future guests and future podcasts.
Yeah. So now that you mentioned the Burr, and we will be talking about it with future guests, well, let's give them a little taster of what they can expect. Okay. So the B, what's the first? So the Burr is an acronym. B-R-R-R-R? No more R's. Sometimes
I... Four R's. I always mess it up.
Okay. Okay. What's the first B, Mayu?
Yeah. So you're essentially buying assets, and you want to make sure you buy assets significantly undervalued, as Austin had mentioned before. So you're trying to make money on the buy. So if an asset is worth, let's just say like a condo is worth $500,000, and if you're able to pick it up for $400, $450, whatever the case is, you're already buying that asset about $50,000 under market value, and you're making an immediate rate of return on day one. So step one, though, is just buy the asset.
Buying the asset. Yeah. And what's the first R of the Burr strategy?
Yeah. So I think there's two ways to view it. Some people call it rehab. Some people call it renovation. I think Bigger Pockets is always called a renovation. That's really
potato, where potato.
Same thing. But ultimately, you want to perform some sort of strategic renovations. You don't want to renovate everything and go above and beyond, as a lot of people do. Just perform the strategic ones that will help you lift the value of the house. So usually that, add an additional bedroom, add an additional bathroom, maybe finish up a basement, increase the amount of living space, etc. Some sort of strategic renovation that will help increase the value of the house.
Wait. So we can't gut properties? You're saying HGTV was lying?
You can gut. You can gut properties. And there's a lot of investors that there's different levels on it, right? You and I were more about what's a cosmetic lift and what is purely a strategic renovation. A lot of investors, you know, duplex conversions, nothing wrong with them, but a lot of investors like to do it. It's just not our investment strategy. That's one. Maybe building an addition to a house, that's another way to renovate and lift the value of the house. And at the end of the day, you're creating a beautiful product that shouldn't give you any trouble for the next 5 to 10 years. Right?
Exactly. Another way to think about it is for every dollar of renovation you put in, you should be driving more than $1 of value to the property. So if I'm putting in a dollar of renovations to a house, I should be driving maybe $1.25 in value of the property. Yeah. I shouldn't be driving anything less than a dollar, or it's actually costing me more money that's coming out of my pocket. But there are cases where we might have to do it when we deal with mechanical things like electrical, HVAC. It's probably not going to add a significant amount of value to your house, but those are the necessary evils that come with investing. Anyways, yeah. So we covered the first R. What is the second R of the BRRRR strategy?
Yeah, so this is just renting out the asset class. So when you're buying out the property, you already should have an idea about what that property would generate for you with good quality renovations and as an unrenovated property. So ideally this property is cash flowing. There are some investors that aren't that focused on cash flow, and if that's you, that's okay as well. But you want to rent out that property. If there's multiple units, you want to turn around the building and you know, try to get top dollar wherever possible. And then Austin, the fourth one, refinance. Why don't you tell them about that one?
I will not. You'll have to tune it. No, I'm joking. So refinancing a property. Essentially what that is that you take the beautiful new product that you renovated it, you shop it to a bank or a financial institution, some sort of lender, and say, hey, this is my new product. This is the house that I have now. I know it's worth more than the price that I paid for originally because I did all of these renovations. Now tell me what this house is worth. The appraiser will go in and look at that house and compare it to other houses that sold nearby in the area. And if other houses in the area sold for, let's say, $500,000, and you bought this house for $400,000, maybe you put in $20,000 worth of work, so you're all in at $420,000. What an ironic number, $420,000, nice. And yeah, the house is worth $500,000 based on the appraisers looking at other houses that sold around the area. Now, if you're in Canada, the appraiser, the lender will likely say, I'm going to loan you 80% of the house's worth, of the house's value. So now you're getting an 80% loan on that $500,000. And your old mortgage was 80% of the $400,000 that you purchased. I wish I chose easier numbers so I can do this mental math, but I'm not even going to attempt it. Now, basically what happened is that you have a new mortgage amount, you pay down your old mortgage, and you have leftover cash. So that cash should theoretically be enough to cover your down payment at the very least, or if you're doing a better BRRRR, might cover your down payment and your renovations. Those are the rare scenarios. Those are what's called a full BRRRR. It's highly coveted. It's what we obviously try to chase. But essentially a BRRRR is that we're trying to add value to the house. We're refinancing it with the bank to take out as much money that we invested as possible. And the last R is repeat. So that money that we took out, we take it and we buy another property and repeat the exact same process again. So you're looking at buying, renovating, renting, refinancing, and repeating the strategy again and again and again.
Yeah. So ultimately the BRRRR is definitely a very debt focused investment strategy, but it allows you to leverage debt to significantly grow your portfolio at a rate at which, if you're just trying to save on a paycheck, and if you don't have a significant amount of capital when you're first getting started, it allows you to scale at a very exponential rate of growth. And it's something that me and Austin and a lot of our interviewees have used extensively over the years. All right, Austin. So that wraps up our first episode of the Rise podcast. As I mentioned before, our next episode will be Austin digging in a little bit into my backstory. And then vice versa, I'll make sure to dig into Austin's story and get us some nice juicy details that he's never really exposed before. So with that being said, Austin.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening and tuning in. Hope you guys enjoyed the first episode. Make sure to subscribe. We're probably going to be on Spotify, on iTunes, on Stitcher. I think that's what it's called. Yeah. But we'll leave a description down below of every single platform that you can find the podcast in. Share it with your friends, share it with your family, and make sure to subscribe and tune in for future episodes. Until next time, guys, invest smarter and live better.